You've probably heard the old story. A mother was making pancakes for her sons. One son was about 5, the other about 3, I suppose. As you can imagine, the two boys began to argue over who would get the first pancake. The mother saw an opportunity to teach a lesson to her sons, so she said, "Boys, if Jesus were here, I think he would say, 'Let my brother have the first pancake. I will eat when he's finished.'" So the older one turned to his brother and said, "You be Jesus." Yes, it's hard to be like Jesus, isn't it? It's hard to follow Jesus' teachings. Following in the way of Christ can get you into trouble, can get you hurt, it can get you killed. Even so, Jesus doesn't water it down for us. Rather than making discipleship easy, he makes it hard. Several weeks ago, River Road member Bill Tuck led a series of Wednesday night discussions on his new book, The Difficult Sayings of Jesus. And as he went through several of the very many difficult sayings of Jesus, he pointed out to us that some sayings of Jesus are difficult because of cultural context or translation issues or myriad of factors. Other times, Jesus' words are difficult simply because they are. Despite their being crystal clear, they are difficult. Turn the other cheek. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. Sometimes Jesus' words are difficult for a myriad of reasons. Other times they're difficult because he's clear. Reminds me of what Mark Twain once said. He said, "It ain't the parts of the Bible that I can't understand that bother me. It's the parts that I do understand." Turn the other cheek. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. I've never seen that cross-stitched on a pillow, have you? The problem is not that we don't understand what Jesus is saying here, it's that we do. We just don't like it. When I hear Jesus' words about living peacefully, responding to one another peacefully, my mind takes me back to October 2006. I had just begun serving the First Baptist Church in Ahoskie, North Carolina, as pastor. It was a fall day, and I remember coming home after work to turn on the news, and there I saw it. All the stations were carrying it. Do you remember? It was a day, typical fall day in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, peaceful, quiet, but that peace was shattered when Charles Roberts broke into a one-room Amish schoolhouse and shot 10 young Amish girls, age 6 through 13, and he killed 5 of them before he turned the gun on himself. But as the story unfolded, another remarkable story unfolded along with it. You may recall these details too. In the midst of their grief over this shocking loss, the Amish community, you'll recall, didn't cast blame. They didn't point fingers. They didn't vow revenge. No, they reached out with grace and compassion to the killer's family. The very afternoon of the shooting, the grandfather of one of the young victims expressed his forgiveness to Mr. Roberts, the shooter. Later that evening, Amish neighbors visited the Roberts family to comfort them in their sorrow and pain. A few days after that, the Roberts family was invited to the funeral of one of the young Amish girls who had been killed. And get this, at the funeral service for Mr. Roberts, the Amish mourners outnumbered the non-Amish ones. Could you do what they did? I'm not so sure I could. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. At first glance, Jesus' words seem dehumanizing, as if he were re-victimizing the victim, telling her to keep quiet and continue taking the abuse. But let me be clear here. If someone is hurting you, you do not have to sit there and take it. That's not what Jesus is saying here. Jesus is not telling victims to roll over and play dead, but to actively resist the evil toward them. Just not with evil means in return. See, when the Amish chose to forgive Mr. Roberts' family, they stood up to that evil. They stood up to it with love. And when they did so, they asserted power. They asserted their own power over the hatred and the fear. Jesus' words to us here are an encouragement for us to actively resist oppression and evil, to stand up to it, to not sit idly by. But as we are doing so, we must not lose who we are, who we're called to be. Do you remember Matthew Shepherd? Hard to believe it's been more than 20 years ago now. Matthew was a college student at the University of Wyoming. He was brutally beaten for being gay. Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson approached Matthew to give him a ride home from a bar one night. At the trial, they claimed that Matthew made a sexual advance toward one of them. The two men then proceeded to beat Matthew brutally over and over and over again. They then tied him to a fence on a country road and left him alone all night in sub-freezing temperatures. You'll recall that by the time someone found Matthew the next morning and got him to the hospital, there was little they could do. No way to save him. He died as hundreds stood candlelight vigil just outside the hospital. Matthew was 21 years old. McKinney and Henderson, the two men who killed Shepherd, they were arrested They were tried and they were found guilty, convicted of a brutal hate crime. Guilty of first-degree murder, they were up for the death penalty in the state of Wyoming. But Matthew's mother came and stood before the judge, asked the judge to spare their lives. Who could understand what she had gone through in the agonizing months leading up to that trial? I mean, what mother could sleep at night with the nightmares, the mental images of her beloved son tied to a fence, beaten, left alone all through the night? And somehow deep within her, there was the ability, the faith, I don't know, to stand before the judge and show these two men mercy that they had not shown her own son. How could she do it? And I'll be the first to admit, church, all this talk about loving your enemies, doing good to those who hate you, giving away your coat, it sounds naive. It even sounds dangerous, doesn't it? This is not the way the world works. Our entire political and defense systems are built around this notion that we must be ready to respond at all costs, at any given moment. If someone hits us, we hit them back. We hit them harder, we hit them faster, we hit them better. We cannot appear weak, so we must project strength, no matter who gets hurt. Our political leaders model for us a kind of leadership which peddles in lies and name-calling and bullying one another. Love your enemies? That's not the way the world works. Well, that may not be the way the world works, but that's the way the world is supposed to work. Church, we are called to be peacemakers. We are called to give and give and give even when we do not get anything in return. We are called to love even when we are hated. This is difficult. I know, love is not easy. But for a Christian, it is not negotiable. Perhaps you've noticed, I certainly have, that people of faith tend to have a similar reaction whenever it comes to some of these difficult sayings of Jesus. I've noticed it whenever I've taught Sunday school class or had any sort of follow-up when preaching one of these lessons. People of faith tend to have a similar reaction whereby we approach these teachings of Jesus as beautiful and but rather idealistic and impractical, as if Jesus is holding out some perfect standard for us that's just beyond our reach. Well, maybe so, but how can we know that? How can we know that? How can we know that Jesus' teachings here are idealistic or impractical? Have any of us, myself included, have any of us ever taken Jesus seriously enough to test him, to test his words to see if they actually work? Don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting that this is easy. this may be the hardest thing we've ever tried to do. But that's the point. We must try. One of my favorite segments on NPR is what they call StoryCorps. If you're familiar with StoryCorps, if you've heard it before, you know that everyday folks are given an opportunity to tell their stories, to tell what they think perhaps is an average everyday story in the hopes that it might be a blessing or encouragement to others. It's also an attempt to preserve some of the rich stories that float within our families and within our society. One day I was listening to NPR, and it was one of those driveway moments. You know, when the story is so good, you pull the car into the driveway, and you gotta finish. You have to sit there. You don't turn the car off until the story is finished. That happened a while ago, when one of these StoryCorps episodes aired. And in it, I believe Jesus' words were put to the test. Julio Diaz had a daily routine. Every night, the 31-year-old social worker ends his subway commute to the Bronx one stop early. He was telling the story on the radio. He said he did that so that he could eat at his favorite diner every night after work. But one night, as Julio stepped off the train onto what he thought was an empty platform, his evening took an unexpected turn. He was walking toward the stairs to go up to the street when a teenage boy approached him and pulled out a knife. "Give me your money," the boy shouted at him. Julio quickly gave him his wallet. As the teen began to walk away, Julio told him, "Wait a minute. Hey, wait. You forgot something. If you're going to be robbing people the rest of the night, you might as well take my coat. It's awful cold out there." The teen robber looked at his victim as if to say, "What in the world is going on here?" Julio took off his coat and he said, "Why are you doing this?" Julio replied, "If you're willing to risk your freedom for a few dollars, then you probably really need the money. See, I was headed up to a diner to get some dinner. If you want to join me, you're more than welcome." Julio and the teen went into the diner and sat down in a booth. The manager stopped by the table to talk. The busboy came by to talk. Every waiter and waitress in the diner stopped by the table to talk. The teen said, "Do you own this place? You know everybody here." "No," Julio replied, "I just eat here a lot." The teen said, You're nice to the busboy." "Nobody's nice to the busboy." Julio said, "Didn't your mama teach you to be nice to people?" He said, "Yeah, but no one ever does it." As they ate, Julio noticed this teen had such a sad face. So Julio said, "Son, what do you want out of life?" The boy said, "I don't know." When the bill arrived, Julio took it and slid it across the table to the young man. "I have no money. You'll have to pay the bill. But if you'll give me my wallet back, I'll take care of it." Without hesitation, the teen reached in his pocket and gave Julio back his wallet. And just before they left the table, Julio said to the teen, "Don't you have something else for me?" He was hoping to get his coat back, remember? Instead, the teen reached into his pocket, pulled out the knife, and handed it to Julio. Turn the other cheek. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hurt you. Will it work? I don't know. But we must try. Amen.